That's the sound of a World War II-era military aircraft taking off. The range and firepower of those planes had a real impact on the battlefields of Europe and Asia. But surprisingly enough, so did something you can't hear. Their art. We've just observed our 70th Memorial Day since the end of World War II, and today on Central Standard, we're talking about the American fighter planes and bombers that made such a difference in that conflict. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. Later, we'll talk to a couple of real-life Rosie the Riveters, women from here in Kansas City who found themselves doing what was then regarded as men's work, getting those planes ready to fly. But first, we're going to talk about something that might seem insignificant, but might shed a lot of light on the mindset of those who flew those planes and the nation who sent them to do it. Joining us is Dr. John Curatola. He teaches history at U.S. Army Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. John, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. So I want to mention that John will be giving a lecture on Wednesday evening called Props and Pinups, Nose Art in World War II. That's at the National Archives here in Kansas City. So, John, what is this all about? Why is this a thing? What made you think that the art painted on the noses of airplanes should be of interest?
Yeah. Well, the nose art itself provides a rich military legacy that talks to these men themselves. We see these machines, but there's men that are operating these machines, and these aircraft serve as expressions for men in war, men in combat, things that they desire and what they miss about home. So it's a real insight into the individual man or the crew itself, because many of these aircraft had, you know, up to 10, 12 men on the crew. And as you look at this aviation art, some of these are just beautiful standalone pieces of art all by themselves, you know, apart from the implications of them. And they provide a good insight into social norms, popular culture, and the times and the temperament of that era.
Well, let me just clarify how it works. Would one pilot be with a particular plane all the time so there was a real sense of ownership about that particular plane?
Yes and no. It depends on the type of aircraft it was. If it's a single-engine fighter, there's only one pilot flying at any one given time. But if it's a bomber that is crewed by, you know, 10 to 12 people, it may take on the temperament of the entire crew as opposed to one individual.
And a lot of us, I think, have seen some pictures of artwork of some kind painted on planes. In fact, I think usually we probably think of pictures of women painted on the sides of planes near the cockpit. Was that the most common form of this art?
It is. Over 50%, and that's a ballpark figure because nobody really knows, were some kind of idealized feminine form. A lot of times the crews preferred, you know, pictures from Alberto Vargas. I'm sure you've heard of the Vargas girls. Or Gil Elfgren, who's been referred to as the Norman Rockwell of cheesecake to a certain degree. But yes, these are very, very common and probably constitute about half of it.
And idealized images, as you say.
Absolutely. They're usually alluring or seductive or some risque pose, but they're always done with a sense of taste to them. These are military operations, and so therefore they're guided by, you know, authority.
Well, and I think that actually is what makes it sort of an interesting contrast. These are military planes. They're there for a military purpose, and yet there's this little glimpse into, I guess, into the minds of those who fly them.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the Army Air Forces in August of 1944 recognizes this and actually puts out a directive authorizing it as a way to increase crew morale.
But it had actually been going on before that.
It had been going on way before that. Men have been adorning their weapons since ancient times. This is just the modern manifestation of something we've seen throughout the ages.
What are some examples of that? I mean, I don't know how far back your historical studies of this go, but how else have weapons been adorned?
Yeah, on the swords themselves, on the scabbards, on the blades, shields, certainly, helmets, any number of forms. Weapons in the ancient times were very elaborate pieces of art. In the modern time, as the Industrial Revolution kicks off, you see more of this cookie-cutter approach to weapons, and they lose a lot of this ornateness that you see in earlier weapons.
So we mentioned the women. We'll come back to that because that seems to have been a very significant part of this artwork. But what other sorts of images were added to the planes?
Yeah, you see a lot of cartoons. Mickey Mouse is a popular subject. The Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny, Milt Caniff has a strip segment called Mail Call, and there is a female called Miss Lace that's popular. Al Capp and the Little Abner characters are also very popular. You also will see references to geography, hometown, home state. Patriotic tones of America at that time are also there. And, of course, the girl back home, not necessarily the Vargas girl, but the girlfriend or the wife or even a daughter, sometimes on these knowns, innate planes. And lastly, a lot of times you will see victory markings or mission sets. How many times did this bomber go into Germany? Fighter sweeps or victory markings over an enemy aircraft.
Notches on the belt.
Absolutely. That's what they're talking about.
I wonder... And I should mention, by the way, we're tweeting some of those photos out from our Twitter handle, at KCURCST, if you want to see some of those pictures. If you have seen, I'm sure, many of these pictures, how would you assess the quality of them as art?
Yeah, and that is a full spectrum. You see, as I had mentioned earlier, some very beautiful standalone pieces of art, too. Something that is, you know, basically done haphazardly. There are, in a number of units, actual commercial artists who were drafted or volunteered to join into the Army Air Forces who did beautiful work. And you see this work in many museums throughout the world today. It's interesting when Lindbergh went to go visit the South Pacific, he was aghast by what he saw on the nose of fighter aircraft.
Really? Aghast in what sense?
From both quality and the moral implications. Didn't like seeing the scantily clad women on the noses of some P-38 fighter aircraft.
Well, and let's ask about that a little bit. On a certain level, I suppose it's easy enough to understand these are men who were off at war, away from their wives or their girlfriends. Mm. But is there something else there that it reveals about attitudes toward women, something about military culture?
Yeah, it's a good point. And I'm glad you're having the ladies after me talk about their role, and their very important role in the Second World War. This is still a military that is largely male-centric. This is before you have large numbers of women in the military, or if they are, they're in the auxiliary corps or those kinds of things. And so the images you see of women are largely, you know, idealized. In fact, there's even one aircraft that they paint after what the soldiers approved as the most beautiful women's auxiliary corps woman in the European theater. They name a bomber after her. Now, I can't imagine having a vote like that today in the military.
I wonder how this vote was conducted.
Yeah, I don't know the scientific method of it, but that they dedicated a whole bomber nose to just that particular face.
I wonder, the idealized view of women, were there other attitudes on display in some of this artwork?
You see a number of things. A lot of it is hatred towards Nazi Germany, Hitler, Tojo, specifically the Mussolini, the leaders of the Axis nations. You see a lot of that in those tones. And there's a lot of humor, a lot of irony. You see aircraft named like buckets of bolts, you know, to kind of poke fun at their aircraft. So there's a whole spectrum of themes that you see on these aircraft.
And do you think that the themes are generally positive? Did they serve to actually build up morale? You said that that was why it became authorized in 1944, or was the effect mixed?
No, they're definitely very a positive effect for the soldiers that, and the airmen that are forward, because, again, it gives them some kind of individual expression in an environment that the individual is not as important as the collective, as the group, in getting the mission done. So it served a very important purpose. And for a crew to name their bomber, that was usually a crew decision of some way, shape, and form.
We're talking with John Curatola. He teaches history out at the Staff Command College at Fort Leavenworth, and he's an expert of all things, the art painted on the nose of World War II era planes. John, I have to say, looking at the pictures of some of this artwork, some of it is undeniably, well, cute. The Mickey Mouse, dopey, little puppies. It's really interesting that these tough guys, these soldiers, these airmen were putting these cute pictures on their planes.
Yeah, it again, it's a form of self-expression, and it isn't always just, you know, the cheesecake is the term that I'll refer to it. You know, it takes on many, many types of forms. There are gentlemen who will name their planes after their daughters. Or after their wife or a girlfriend, and very respectfully present. There's ones that are named after the president or Eisenhower. So again, there's a huge spectrum on themes throughout the Second World War.
What do you make of the apparent incongruity of those images, whether they be the cute cartoon characters or pictures of beautiful women, with the very purpose of the machines, mm-hmm. which is to kill, which is to destroy things? Doesn't that seem incongruous?
It does, and that's wherein this art is important for these airmen, because it gives them an outlet. It gives them something to look forward to, especially the ones that you see that are geographically themed, like Kansas City Kitty is a B-24, or you see...
Yeah, describe
Georgia...
Kansas City Kitty so we know what you're talking about. Well, in ways appropriate for the radio.
Yeah, it's a woman sitting, you know, rather seductively, you know, who is looking at you longingly, and it just says, you know, Kansas City Kitty, K-I-T-T-Y. And you see these kinds of themes. There's one called Georgia Peach, same thing. But you also see patriotic tones. One comes to mind is Windy City Avenger, and it has the flag of Chicago in the background. Mm-hmm. And so you will see these kinds of ideas throughout the aviation world as well.
You've mentioned the names of several of the planes. Those, again, are not official names. These are just the crew deciding to name their plane.
That is correct. Yeah.
And so is that true of even the very famous planes that we have heard of, like the Enola Gay, for example?
Well, Enola Gay, getting back to the point that you made earlier about women, that's named after the pilot in command, Paul Tibbetts' mother, very respectfully, you know, named aircraft. Nothing titillating or risque about that at all.
Which would have seemed especially incongruous.
Well, absolutely, yes.
you're also mentioning that the names seem to be integrated with the art. So there was a lot of, it seems like, high-level decision-making that had to happen on the part of the crew to come to these conclusions.
Well, usually the crews would get together and talk about it. Not always. And again, these are just general trends. This isn't the rule. And they would come up with some kind of a theme or an idea or an event that solidified the crew or meant something to a member of the crew or to the collective as well. And they usually discussed it. And then they got with an artist, maybe one of the makeshift artists during the flight line.
Yeah, and who are these artists? I mean, you mentioned there's some very high-quality artwork there.
Absolutely. In the 46 Bomb Group, there's a gentleman named Phil Brinkman, who is a commercial artist. And his particular unit flew B-24s, and they named every one of their aircraft after a symbol of the Zodiac.
Huh.
So all the aircraft have a Zodiac-themed nose art to them, and they're absolutely just beautiful pieces of art.
How many of these survive to this day? How many have been preserved?
Yeah, unfortunately, not a lot compared to the size of the fleet in the Second World War. However, there are a number of museums throughout the country that you can still view original pieces. The Air Force Museum, certainly at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the Commemorative Air Force Museum down in Texas, and there's other private aviation museums throughout the country that still preserve this unique art.
So we're talking about a few dozen left? Or
No, there's more than that. But again, compared to the size of the U.S. air fleet in the Second World War, it's relatively small. Many of these aircraft were scrapped, you know, as surplus. There's one particular piece of art, if I may, done by a gentleman named Sarkis Bardigan with the 43rd Bomb Group. And he had these huge murals painted on aircraft. And one of them is called The Dragon and His Tail. And the tail, our nose arc goes from the very forward of the fuselage all the way to the very back of the aircraft.
Wow.
And when the plane went to the salvage yard, the salvage men didn't want to destroy it because it was such a beautiful piece of art. And they saved it to the very last, hoping somebody would buy it, and nobody did.
And so there it went.
And there it went.
It does strike me that there is sort of a tragic element to this. I can't think of any other place where art is created knowing that it could very well be shot at, shot down, and as you said, scrapped if it's no longer needed.
Going back to the 46 Bomb Group, since you brought that up, in the Signs of the Zodiac, he repeatedly started to paint Taurus the Bull, and the three times he started it, every time the plane never returned. So there's no Taurus the Bull in that particular squadron because it never made it home.
In your study of all of the content, you've got fantasy characters, you've got women. Do you detect anything political in any of these paintings?
Absolutely. You will definitely see patriotic tones, things like, you know, Tojo's Revenge or Knockout Dropper, you know, with pictures of Hitler, you know, or Wahoo Warrior with the skull, mm-hmm. you know, of Hitler, you know, being scalped, you know. So you definitely see that in many of these works. And they're not always what would be said to be politically correct, but again, these are expressions of men in war.
Yeah, and it was a different time.
It was a different time. Yes,
I also wonder, there was a certain act of rebellion in doing this painting at all, right? When it wasn't authorized to do.
Absolutely. Many air crews, this is their kind of tongue-in-cheek way of, you know, thumbing their nose at authority. I have an interesting story on this. The one crew flew on the South American route down to Brazil and then over to the Azores. And when they landed to get fuel, the local commander took offense to the scantily clad woman on the side of this bomber. And he told the crew chief to fix it. So he got out his paint and he covered her up and put on a swimsuit. Well, when they landed, they went through some rainstorms. And when they landed in North Africa, the swimsuit was indeed gone. And the pilot asked the crew chief, and he says, well, I used water-based paints on purpose.
Ah, it just lasted long enough.
That's correct.
John Curatola is lecturing tomorrow at the National Archives, not tomorrow, Wednesday at 6:30. That's at 400 West Pershing Road, by the way. You can make a reservation. It's appreciated. You'll have more info at kcur.org. There's a light reception beforehand at 6 o'clock. John, how did you get to be an expert on this topic? I can't imagine that there were a lot of classes on this in your military training.
No, this just comes from a lifelong love of aviation, and specifically World War II aviation. I find that the marriage of men and machines during this era fascinating. I think this is the last era in aviation history where the men's ability to keep up with the machine matched each other. As technology increases, I think it tends to take over to a certain degree. And here you had men and machine married to an extent I don't see that you don't see in later technologies.
You work with military officers now. You teach them out in Leavenworth. I wonder, does this sort of thing, seeing this from history, does it give you insight into the minds of, I mean, obviously you were a military officer yourself. Does it give you insight into the minds of how a person in war works?
It does. When you're on forward deployment, when you're, you know, in a combat zone, you worry about different things. You're focusing on different aspects of life. That's very different, and it's hard to understand if you're in the continental United States and you're not there. There's an appreciation for things and a wanting for things that maybe when you're back home, you don't really understand. And so there is a different mindset that goes on.
Can you imagine this ever being replicated in today's world? Is there anything equivalent? Are the stealth bombers getting scantily clad women painted on the sides of them?
Well, you do have it today. It is not to the extent of the scantily clad women, but you do see many of the patriotic tones, support for the United States, you know, the war on terrorism and those kinds of things. You do see that today, but it is not to the extent you saw previously in the Second World War.
Well, we need to take a break now. I want to thank our guest, Dr. John Curatola. He teaches history at the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth. John, it's been good to be with you.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll move from pictures of women painted on the planes to the real women who built them. Real live Rosie the Riveters from here in Kansas City, who join us now 70 years later to talk about their service. Stay with us.